Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Welcome, everybody. Another edition of Dr. Homebrew. And we have at least one beer to drink today, possibly two. I don't know. We're going to figure it out on the fly because this is what we do over here. And then I'm going to regale everybody with stories about homebrewing again. It sounds really, really fucking boring, but, you know, it might be an interesting conversation for anybody who has been listening to this show, who hasn't homebrewed in a while. I just want to talk about,
what I'm doing right now.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, we all got that bug, you know, at one point in our lives and really had it to be this far into it. I mean, doing shows about it, of course, but like, if you take a step back from it or you have kids or, you know, life takes you different places and sometimes you miss it, but you feel like, oh, can I go back to that?
Exactly.
Brewing as much as I did.
With me, as always, is Brian Cooper and Brian Shar. Welcome, boys.
Hello.
Thanks for coming back on this fine evening to talk about some beer. And we're going to drink more of Colin's beer. You might remember Colin from the last show. A 3D, whatever that is, I don't know. And frankly, I don't even care.
It's very late evening on the East Coast at this point, and it might soon be tomorrow there. So
that's true. That's how time works. Before we get to all of that, though, I do want to thank our sponsor, Five Star Chemicals. You go to fivestarchemicals.com and let them be the crux of your cleaning and sanitizing process. How about that? Let them be the heart and the cornerstone of your brewery, your home brewery, because really, it's the best way to clean and sanitize your home brewing equipment is to use Five Star Chemicals. Don't let anybody else tell you anything else. These other fly-by-night podcasts, they don't know anything. We're the only ones who know anything. Some people say that other people don't know anything. I would never say that, but I'm just saying.
We might not know the difference between regimen and regime, but we're getting there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know knowledge. Anyway, fivestarchemicals.com. My apologies for my cool thing. Anyway, Colin, what's up, dude? Welcome back.
Glad to be back.
What are we drinking? The 3D. What is that?
The Czech Dark Lager.
Czech Dark Lager.
Get out your 3D glasses and drink this beer.
Exactly. This is my 3D glass. Exactly right. I don't know what you're hiding that you had to be all, you know, you had to make up code words for this, but Czech Dark Lager. Have we had one of these before? I feel like we've had one on the show before.
I'm trying to remember. I don't recall it. A CDL, man. I don't know. It's
Might have been when Keith was in the second seat here. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. It just sounds familiar. But anyway, is this something you made before?
I've done Schwartz beer a couple times. This is the first time doing the Czech version of it.
Okay, is that all that is, you guys? Just the Czech version of a Schwartz beer?
No, not exactly. They're similar, but they're not the same.
Come on, Colin. I'm gullible, dude. Don't fuck with me.
Okay, so a Schwartz beer maker. Decides to make a Czech dark lager.
And, go ahead and start us off with this beer, please.
And the train is leaving for Prague at approximately 11:45 p.m. What time does it get there, and what kind of beer does it make?
Cooper, let's start us off with this beer.
Okay.
I get all my cats in a row. I got to get all of them herded.
That beer had a strong hiss when I opened it. I want to say, like, it was like blasting. And look at the head. For those of you watching on Facebook Live, it's up there. It throws up a nice big creamy looking head. But we'll get to appearance
right there.
Yeah, there you go. Yep. Nice. It's hard to get that level of carbonation in a bottle, and well done there. So, aroma wise, medium low dark bread crust like malt aroma. With kind of a light grainy impression to it. It's not sweet seeming. Getting a low, spicy floral hop, little noble hop thing in there. No DMS or diacetyl. It's clean. The fruity esters are not poking through here. It's a nicely lagered profile. Getting a hint of some coffee-like malt richness. It's really clean and inviting aroma. Just a little bit maybe more rich than I might expect, but that's not necessarily in a bad way. So appearance wise, it's a rich dark brown, seems to have good clarity, but it's pretty hard to see through. At the corners, yeah, you can see it's pretty clear, and even the edges of the glass, you can see through it. A little kind of a burgundy highlight in there when you shine it right out of light. But as I said, the head just pours a nice medium full head of mostly fine bubbles, creamy, and it persists quite well, like kind of a tan color. And so full points for appearance. Again, flavor-wise, the malt comes across first, the notes of dark bread, and some moderate kind of coffee-like, maybe not quite to roast, but heavily rich malt overall. So finish is pretty dry. Clean lager profile, again, is obvious here. It's just nice, and the esters are restrained. Hops are a bit buried here in the flavor. I think this sample is probably a little colder than the one I judged last night. Three nights ago, I guess now, but had a little kind of roastiness to it in the flavor. So, but yeah, it's.
I get a little bit. Yeah. Of that. Yeah. Not much.
A little edge to it. Yeah, it's coming up as it warms up. I'm going to warm up with my hands a little bit, see what we get. But very low hop bitterness. The bitterness is out of the way, and that's fine. Shouldn't be a big bitter bum. Low spicy hop flavor. Overall, it's balanced to the malt. And it's smooth. I would say it's not too acidic, and it is when it starts out cooler. It's nice. To be fair, these beers are probably usually drank fairly cool. They're not like served at British pub temperature. You get a cold bottle of Czech dark lager, and that's what you get. You drink it, and it might warm up as you're going, but. It should never be too biting or harsh. It's going to be smoothly malty, some richness, some dark fruit. I'm not getting a lot of any like plum or raisin or anything there, but it's mostly kind of a nice base malt, dark bread with a little bit of roasty, chocolatey element to it. And in a way, it is kind of reminiscent of a Schwartz beer to me.
Absolutely.
Just because it's like all there's not a lot in the middle. It's that the bread and then little roast and rich, kind of at the end. And it's restrained enough, but it's there. It's poking out a bit. Mouthfeel is medium bodied. I'd say it's not very creamy, but it's just a hint of a little bit of a bite to it. Possibly some astringency there from the darkest roast malts. Not getting any real alcohol warmth here. Carbonation is medium high. And that could be also what's contributing to it being just a little more biting, but it's, I think the carbonation is actually a pretty good place for the beer. It shouldn't be flat or too undercarbonated. So you want to, want to have some of that in there for sure. Overall, this is nicely lagered, Czech dark lager. The roast and the coffee coming through just a bit too richly for my taste for the beer. I want it to just kind of be just a little sweeter and have more of a balance to that, the dark bread malt and less towards the chocolate and the roast and the whatever else is in there. But the richest dark malts, I would pull those back just a touch, lighten those up. And especially anything that's kind of tending towards roastiness. Perhaps try to leave a trace more sweetness to accent that. So some of the fruity malt flavors can poke through in the middle. I'd like just a little bit more of that sweetness, but overall it's still very drinkable and a great job overall. I would give it a 35 in a competition. It's a good solid 35. Very good beer.
Not too bad. All right, Char.
All right.
Yes, master, baby. Let's go.
All right. Czech dark lager. This is a very tasty beer. I had to look this up in the BJCP style guidelines, and essentially They characterize this as like a Munich Dunkel or a Schwarzbier that's like a little more oomph in terms of malt and hops. And that's ultimately what I thought this was. I really liked it. I hope, like Brian, I can go hang out in Prague for a few days someday. That'd be freaking awesome. And then I'll be a little more knowledgeable about this. And I know what I'll be doing with at least some of my time in Prague. Aroma. Aroma is richly malty with notes of cola and dark bread. And yeah, maybe I talked myself into cola from reading the style guidelines, because you know that's the way that senses can be. You can talk yourself into things. Then I was smelling just a hint of hazelnut. And I looked back, I looked back at the descriptors and can be nuts. But, all right, hey, I picked one out without being told it was hazelnut. Just a hint, right? This is not like a hazelnut a porter or something crazy like that, but I get just a very, maybe a hint of a hazelnut note there.
Yeah.
I didn't get any roast aroma, no hop aroma, no off aromas. Overall, I really liked that. That was 9 out of 12. Appearance, it's clear as much as you can tell in a dark beer. Color is dark brown. The head is medium size and long lasting, kind of a light to medium brown color. 3 out of 3. Flavor initially is a dark malt, kind of chocolatey and bread crusty, like the aroma. Medium bitterness balances in mid palate. I think the maltiness goes back to taking center stage into a long finish. Some low spicy hop flavor kind of comes out in the finish. This isn't supposed to be a super hop flavor beer, but I did get a little spiciness there in the end. It's well attenuated, no off flavors, 15 out of 20. Mouthfeel, 5 out of 5. Medium body, kind of medium low carbonation. Very slight warming, I noted, but I also noted I hadn't eaten dinner yet. So that might have been why I got a little bit of warming out of this. Creamy, not astringent. Overall impression, 9 out of 10 for a 41 out of 50. This is like a richer Schwarzbier, and I like Schwarzbier a lot. But this is like just a little bit bigger Schwarzbier. No technical flaws. If I were going to do anything to change this, I might maybe add a little more aroma hop. It's not required, but like a little bit of spicy aroma might. It's one of those things that's not required, but it doesn't hurt if it has it. But it's also tricky because if it's too much, then it's going to be like, whoa, this shouldn't be like a super hop aroma beer. Yeah. But maybe just adding a little bit of aroma hops might help this pop a little more. But yeah, 41 out of 50, that's excellent. And I really enjoyed it. And I plan on drinking the rest of this bottle. So thank you for sharing.
Nice.
Yeah. I'll say I enjoyed it more when it was a little colder. And but I would also say, to Brian's point of, it should be a little richer version of like either a Munich Dunkel or Schwarzbier, kind of in that range. The ones I tasted there were more towards the, kind of in between or more towards the Munich Dunkel range. Kind of in between, not Schwarzbier, but most of the malt flavor was kind of in the middle, and just not roasty, but just richness kind of. And I mean, some of them I tasted there were cans that I bought on the street, and it might have been sitting there forever. I don't know. But, they just have them on ice blocks on carts, and you walk by and grab, give me Krusevich or whatever, and they're good. But we also did, when I was there, we did the walking beer tour of Prague. And so they took us to the oldest brewery in Prague and the newest brewery in Prague, all this walking tour. And it mentions in the style guidelines that Ufleku brewery has been operating Prague since 1499. When we tasted it there, that's the daddy. And it was more of that warm kind of richly malty, not too richly, but just like a nice, smooth drinking, clean lager, nice and malty, but not pushing the roasty edge too much. So, yeah. I mean, that's my memory of it. It's been, 10, 12 years, but anyway, it's
I defer to your experience, even though Ufleku was only 520 years old. I defer to your experience.
Well, let's talk to Colin a little bit about his recipe and how he came about it and all that kind of fun stuff. Colin, what's going on with this beer?
Yeah. So I've only had a few here and there, and again, who knows how old. So I was just kind of going off the style guidelines, and they're kind of all over the place. So there's lots of interpretation.
A lot of range and interpretation. That's the other thing I read too, and maybe I'm being too picky about it because it's a really clean beer. That's what I will say. Yeah. So go ahead.
I really liked it, and I was just kind of at a loss. It's, like, it's really good, but it's not perfect. So I don't know what to do different, I guess, is kind of the main feedback of what I was hoping. But I can run through the recipe if you guys
would like the recipe. Let's see what's going on.
Okay. So it's Weyermann Bohemian Dark Malt. So that's basically a Czech Munich. So it's 4.5 pounds or 38%. And then Weyermann Bohemian Floor Malted Pilsner at 5.5 pounds, which is like 47%. A pound of Midnight Wheat at 8.5%. And then 3/4 pound of Kara Munich 2 at 6%.
Midnight Wheat 8-something%?
8.5.
Okay. That seems a little high. And no Vienna or Munich in there?
Well, the Bohemian Dark is
The Bohemian Dark is like a Munich key version. Yeah, okay, got it.
Then fermented with YEAST 2278, the Czech Pils. I pitch about 2 million cells. I tend to pitch high on the lagers. Pitched it at 46 until Krausen, and then hit 50 and then bumped it up kind of toward the end just to kind of do diacetyl rest type thing. So OG was 53, final gravity was 15. So the yeast took a hot minute. It didn't quite attenuate as well as I would have expected. So they weren't quite as happy. So, which I'm glad to hear it was dry enough. That's kind of what I was wondering. So that's good.
What was your hot bill?
So I bittered with Magnum. So I did 0.78 ounces. So like 25 IBUs at 60 minutes. And then I did 1/2 ounce of Hallertauer at 15 and then 1/2 ounce at 0.
Okay.
So just a little, I'll probably use Saz. Looking back, I don't know why I used Hallertauer as opposed to Saz. Who knows?
Well, why not?
It's fine. Yeah. Noble hops and Noble hop. Yeah.
Yeah. Really. As far as water goes, mash pH was 5.2. Sodium was 25 PPM. I'm sorry, 14 PPM. Sulfate was 32, chloride was 16.
Okay. I would back off the Midnight Wheat and bring up more of a Vienna Munich kind of component in there. They bring up the warmth of those middle rich malts and back off the roasting impression just a little bit. It's nice the way it is. It's rich and it's more like a really rich Schwarz beer that's pushing that line towards roasty. But
you're right. That's sort of what I was thinking too. There is something in the middle that I don't want to say falls flat, but falls flat. It's there. There's like a caramely kind of nice richness, but then it sort of buttons itself up. It doesn't really carry through to the roast at the end. There's like a gap between the mid palate and the roastiness at the end. And I think if you bring that Midnight Wheat down a little bit, maybe even I don't know enough about the style to say completely, but bring it down and then boost that middle with maybe some crystal malts or something. I don't really know, but I think you could eke out some more richness out of this. And I think that's what you're looking for, Colin. Right? Like that sort of level of like maybe is that the component that you were saying that may be missing?
I haven't had enough to know what they're really supposed to taste like.
Yeah, so. I have no idea either, man.
You can use some dark caramel malts in there to get that richness too. A little bit of, you know, C120 or C80 or something in there to boost that a little bit.
The carbonation is definitely a factor too. So I accidentally bottled some and then forgot to turn the CO2 back up. And so I pulled some and the carbonation was way low and it was a completely different beer. So I do have it spiked pretty up and it kind of dries it out and gives it a little bite, which I tend to like, but I bet it would be a completely different beer if it were less carbonated.
Sure.
I agree.
Absolutely.
And pulling back the darkest malt too is going to let the hop shine through a little bit more too. Yeah. There should be a little more hop to malt balance.
Okay.
What was your mash temperature?
I mashed at 150.
Okay.
Yep. That's fine.
Yeah. That's fine. Everything's good.
So you kind of talked about biasing yourself reading the style guidelines. I swear there's like a violet or grape or some kind of berry something in there, because it talks about it in the style guidelines. And everyone I've had try it says, you're crazy, that's not in there. But and I actually bought a full sack of the Bohemian Dark and the four malted Pilsner, and I brewed other beers with those malts, and I still smell it in those. So I don't know what it is, but
well, if you smell it, you smell it.
Yeah.
Whether you've talked yourself into it or not, and that's a perception that you have, and the fact that you perceive that across different beers you make means that that may be a real thing.
Yeah, there's some malt fruitiness to it there. It's not it's not a yeast derived ester. There's something a little berry like in there for sure.
So I did a Czech amber with basically 100% of the Bohemian Dark, and that's where I noticed it. So I'm assuming that's where it's coming from.
Can you taste it when you chew the malt, or I mean, is it?
Yeah, a little bit.
Interesting. I'd love to get a hold of some of that. You're choosing some really fun ingredients to play with here. So
yeah, I was
on Fireman's website, look around. I'm like, oh, Bohemian Dark, and the local brewery here in town ordered me a sack. So
nice.
I'll give it a shot.
That's sweet. Cool.
What's the brewery name?
Yep.
What's the brewery name?
Thomas Creek.
Thomas Creek. Okay, cool. Nice. Give me a little shout out. I mean,
there. Yep.
Yeah, now all the other brewers in his town will be hitting them up. this
you told Colin that you would do it for him, and now, yeah, I know Colin. Do we have anything else?
I'm glad you guys liked it. It kind of gives me some areas to kind of poke around to see what I can do to change it. I haven't sent it to any other competitions or anything. I was just kind of curious.
Yeah.
I liked it too. I mean, I think everyone's spot on. I think you're like 3/4 of the way there. You're right there, and I think you're right, Colin. You seem to have like a good handle on what you think your beers need, especially for what you like, but also to style. I'm assuming you're trying to hit the style, not necessarily just brew what you want.
Yeah.
You kind of have it. There's a missing link, but without enough examples of the style, it's hard to fit that piece in. So, but it's good. I mean, like the guys have said, there's nothing inherently wrong with the fermentation. How long did you lager it? Did you say?
It took about a month to ferment, and then I basically put it in a keg, put it in the fridge on gas, and let it sit for a month before I tap it. So
great.
So about 2 months.
Cool. Yeah.
Perfect.
It's good to be a yeast wrangler too. Keep that yeast happy and pitch a lot of salt, especially with those lagers. For a 5 gallon, get a quart of really happy slurry or more, and just go with it and go in there. Right. So now's the point where we have to decide what else to do with this show, right?
Well, let's take a break. We're gonna take a break first, okay. Brian.
We take a break,
and then we're gonna figure it out. So actually, you know what, Colin? We have another beer from you. It seems like a waste to just not judge it.
Let's go for it.
So why don't we take a break? If you're going to be up already, I mean, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Gaming? You know? come on. Let's.
He
let's
might be about to embark on a World of Warcraft quest.
Shut up, Brian. just bullshit a little bit about homebrewing and just have a good time. But we're going to drink. What is this beer? This extra beer?
American Strong Ale.
American Strong Ale. Okay. Isn't that Arrogant Bastard?
Yes.
Ish. Yeah, yeah.
Or super hoppy red, depending on.
Yeah.
That's true. Okay. All right, let's take a quick break, everybody, and we'll see you on the other side. This is Dr. Homebrew, and, whatever. I don't know. Enjoy yourself.
Now serving patient number 189. Number 189 at the counter, please.
Now back to Dr. Homebrew.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for sticking around. We still have Colin on the line, and we're going to drink his American Strong Ale, right? Did I go brain dead and forget, or that's it,
nope,
right?
That's it. You got it.
22B.
22B. So, like every other question I ask, Colin, is this something you've made before?
This is my third iteration.
Okay. So when you're making them, what have you been changing? What have you been tweaking out?
So the first one, I didn't do low oxygen very well, so the hop flavor died in about 24 hours. the first 24 hours was great, and then it just died. I couldn't figure it out. And then actually the Hop and Brews podcast, got to learn some techniques in there. I'm actually able to keep hop flavor. So I like this style because to me it's balancing a lot of really intense flavors. Like you got the sweetness, the bitterness, the hops, the malt, and trying to balance all of those at a high level. And so it's really just kind of trying to play with the with all of those working together at the same time.
Yeah. Marry all this stuff.
Yes. Which is a challenge. Like that's I'm not good at subtlety, so subtle balanced beers I don't really care for. I like the really in your face stuff. So
okay. All right. Well, this is that style. That's interesting. Okay. So we're just opening this. It, for me, the initial hit off the aroma is pineapple.
Okay. I'm getting resiny, like resiny hop. Nice. No. And it's hanging in there.
No, pineapple. You're wrong, Brian.
Okay.
You're wrong.
You're actually both right. So
pineapple pizza. No, there's no pizza. The pizza aroma pizza, is low.
Yeah, no. Your marinara is not there's not enough oregano in it, but otherwise it's fine.
So dark caramel marinara, no, not marinara. Resiny hops, a little grapefruity edge to the hops, like a nice citrusy, funky, grapefruity, resiny, piney.
Yeah.
Pineapple-y? Maybe.
Let's do this. Colin, why don't you throw us out your recipe while we're sitting here evaluating? Because I don't want to just sit here and spend 5 minutes of silence while we're all trying to like just kind of word salad shit like we normally do. So, yeah, go ahead and let's just mix this up a little bit.
So I was going more toward like the really hoppy red kind of version of the style. So like Red Rocket, the Bear Republic and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So I have red X malt. So 9 pounds of that at about 44%.
Red X malt?
Yes.
Do you have to be 18 and older to buy it?
No, I don't think so.
That's red triple X malt.
Damn. Yes. They give it to you in a black plastic bag. All right.
So then 2-row, 8.5 pounds, 41%. Special B, 0.5 pound, 2.4%. Cara Ruby, 1 pound, 5%. Wheat malt, 3/4 pound, 4%. Flaked wheat, 3/4 pound, 4%. So that's the malt bill.
Ah.
And then the hop bill, get ready, because it's a lot. So at 60 minutes, I did 1/4 ounce of Columbus and 1 ounce of Chinook. At 10 minutes, I did 1 ounce of Ella and 1 ounce of Saphir. At 5 minutes, I did 1 ounce of Ella and 1 ounce of Saphir. And then I did a hop stand. So what I do for hop stands is I actually have a sous vide. So like one of those immersion cooker things. So I cool it down to about 185 and then stick that in there and let it swirl around at about 185 degrees for 20 minutes. And then I did 1 ounce of Columbus, 1.5 ounces of Ella, 1.5 ounces of Saphir. And then I do dry hop. So I let the beer ferment out and then pressure transfer it into a sealed keg. And then with the hops in it, and then do 3 days. So I did 2 ounces of Chinook, 2 ounces of Columbus, and 1 ounce of Laurel.
Okay, so I have a few questions. What is Ella hops? Never heard of it.
Ella is an Australian hop. It's kind of crossed with a Noble, so it's kind of got the floral but tropical Australian thing going on.
Okay, and then with your sous vide issue, what do you have? Like what's
it's the Anova sous vide. Just buy it off Amazon. Nothing.
Is it a wand or is it the
like a wand?
So you're basically trying to do kind of a whirlpool with keeping it at a high enough temp that you're getting some extraction of the hop characteristics in there. Are you agitating it while you're doing that or?
So the sous vide actually has a little fan in it, so it kind of swirls. Okay.
Nice. Yeah, that's a really cool idea.
Yeah. It's really tight. You guys honestly should get one. It's a great way to make steaks.
Yes.
That's really the best. So you're doing what, 5 gallon batch?
Six gallon?
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And that's your hop stand, you said. That's you just sort of like
whirlpool, hop stand, whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It. So it's right. Not quite swirl enough for a whirlpool, I would say, but close enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
fermented with YE1728. That's just kind of the house strain I use. Pitch at 65 and then 68 once Krausen hits. Mass pH was 5.4. Sodium was 25 ppm. Sulfate was 150. Chloride was 44.
What was your OG?
OG was 84.
Okay. What was your final gravity?
16. So it's 81% attenuation.
Wow. That's nice and dry. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, very dry. It's got enough sweetness though. And the caramel, the rich, the 120C is kind of popping out some nice sweet flavors in there that make it it doesn't seem like it's so dry.
It's very boozy to me. I get like a lot of warming and not boozy in the sense of fusel, but I do get like a sweet ethanol character to this. And that's why I thought maybe I was asking about the OG and final gravity. I thought maybe this was even a bigger OG. And it may be that the sheer amount of hops at the bitterness is giving me a greater perception of the ethanol than is actually there. So the ethanol is not harsh, but it's definitely present. And the hops may be kind of amplifying what's there. And that in combination with this being, you know, the fourth beer of the show, maybe that has a lot to do with why I'm feeling some warming.
Maybe. Feeling good, man.
So it's right at 9%. So high, but not crazy high.
Right.
I'm actually tasting it next to my kick your own ass ale from the kegerator over there here in my garage. Uh-huh. And it's yours. I think yours is actually a little hoppier. Probably quite a bit hoppier.
Okay.
It's got a lot of the whirlpool. You pulled out a lot of nice flavors, and mine is all Chinook. So like your hop variety is also pushing a lot of different flavors in there. I'm also likewise not familiar with the Ella, nor the, what was that? The weird malt you mentioned in there. It's a
Red X.
Rose something here. No, what was it? It was after that somewhere along the way.
Ruby.
Yeah, yeah.
The Ruby something. Oh, yeah. Ruby. Yeah. I need to look that one up because I don't know.
It's a Vireman. It's like 20 ale crystal malt.
Kind of. Okay. Okay.
Any malt that sounds like a stripper name is probably got to be good.
Ruby.
Yeah. I got 5 pounds of Tiffany. It also sounds like something like Jeffrey Dahmer might end up brewing with. I don't know.
Well, it'd be 5 pounds of Blake.
That's a good point.
Some of the malts, beers I've had from Red X malt have just, the Red X comes across in a harsh way to me. It's like biting and just like this gritty red biting flavor. And this doesn't have that to me. It's nice.
The last version was the only change I made between the last version and this was a little bit more Red X. So I think 2 or 3 pounds between a few percentage points between the T-Row and the Red X.
Yeah. It's beautifully clear. You're doing a good job clarifying your beers.
It's just time. Nice. I didn't put any clarifying agents.
Mine. I think mine's probably a little darker.
You have a thicker vessel, thicker cup. I'm looking at the. Nice.
That's cool, dude.
Yeah.
That's tight. So, did you guys say it's balanced? I mean, what are you? That's the main thing I was kind of trying to figure out.
I think it's. I mean, it's balanced, but I don't know, man. For me, I mean, I'm not like a giant aficionado of the style, but it's like the almost tropical, like the tropical flavors and the sweetness from those malts and the bitterness doesn't match. It's like mismatched. It's balanced, but the flavors for me aren't, they don't hit, they hit different.
They're not complementary.
Yeah,
so
a little bit.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Because I definitely get like a pineapple, like a canned pineapple, like canned pineapple juice flavor and aroma from. I'm imagining it's the Ella. I've never really smelled it in hops before, but
Ella's more floral.
Okay.
Yeah.
At least to me.
There's something that doesn't work. I think you did a really good job with the recipe.
As far as balancing it
and your up and downs, but if it was for me, I would more go back to the classic maybe sea hops or something for like this. If you want to be American strong ale, I feel like you need the sea hops in there.
Which there's a lot of Columbus and a lot of Chinook. There's just other stuff too.
Well, then, like the
Get rid of the other shit. I don't know. I don't know. What do you want?
Advice? Probably from the
realistic shit.
I say, want to talk about the Saphir hop. That might be what's pushing some of that kind of the citrusy tangerine like kind of thing in there. And that's nice to me. I don't think it's too tropical. What I want to say is when I experiment with a beer like this, I find that if you try to use things like Citra, Mosaic, and some of the, you know, the tropically hops that you would use with a modern, you know, juicy IPA, they don't play as well with the richness and the boldness of the dark malts as something that's just kind of grab you by the balls like Chinook, you know, like, or just something by the Columbus is great in here. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's a good blend to me. It works pretty well. I can see a little bit of what JP's saying about there's a little twist here that's pulling it in a different direction, but
it's almost like candied lemon peel or something. It's just something different. And for me, it's not a style that I gravitate towards. So it might just be like, that's just, it is what it is. So, you know, take that for what you
want. It's tasty. I'm enjoying it. I think it expresses as more the, like you said, the Imperial Red kind of a style, as opposed to the, like, let's just clone Arrogant Bastard, you know, which is hard to get just right, but it's, you know, that maybe a little simpler in a way that it's a lot of C120 and a lot of Chinook and there you go. But this is more, has more finesse to it. Maybe you don't want finesse. I don't know, but it's good. I appreciate it. What the ABV come out on this? Like
nine.
Okay. It's smooth for nine for sure.
I think it is.
I think if you're making this style at home, and correct me if I'm wrong, Colin, but you're making it for you.
Yes.
You're not making it for style, because the style is sort of like, I don't know, man, it's strong and it's red or whatever, but I don't know. It seems like, unlike your other beers, you're making it specifically for your tastes.
Yeah. So I was trying to get dank pine and floral was kind of the hop notes that I was trying to hit.
I don't get any of that.
Okay.
There's plenty of resin in here. What are you talking about?
I don't get it.
Resiny. But then the tangerine comes out on top of it a little bit. Then it twists it. I don't know. I like it. I think it's good.
Yeah, it's definitely well made.
There's some sweetness in there too, especially from the alcohol. It's probably, you know, it's fairly well attenuated, but the alcohol pushes a little sweetness. And it's smooth, but yeah.
Excellent. Wow.
Fun.
Well, there's thanks for sending it, man. I appreciate it.
Kick your own ass. Yeah, ale, I like it. Sign there.
Oh, yeah, there literally it is.
Me kicking my own ass.
There you go. All right, Colin. Well, we're just going to bullshit for a little bit. So, I mean, you're welcome to hang if you want to, or, you know, if you want to go to bed.
Yeah, I kind of have to get up in a few hours. So, probably.
I did want to know, yeah, what got you into homebrewing 6 years ago when you decided, I'm going to buy a kit and do this? What was the impetus there?
So, my brother had homebrewed and it seemed cool. And then I graduated college and moved to South Carolina. And I was like, oh, it's probably about time to buy a kit. So, bought a standard kit with malt extract and that stuff, brewed it once, and I'm like, okay, I'm buying a mash tun. So I just took off from there. So this is basically kind of how my brain works. So for work, I'm a metallurgist, so I deal with chemistry and process control and all that good stuff, and that's exactly what homebrewing is to me. So like making my own spreadsheets and trying to tweak things down to the nth degree, that's just kind of how I operate. So
Go ahead. You're going to say the same thing.
Science in the brain, you know, like we live near the Livermore National Lab, and like some of the best brewers come from there, and like just microbiologists make great beer, you know, that metallurgist, you know, there you go.
Exactly. Well, Colin, do you know how to weld?
Not very well. I can look at a weld and see if they did their job right, but actually doing it, not so much.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too. Yeah, that sucks. Or no, right. That's cool. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how many homebrewers are process oriented people, and how many do a really good job. They're engineers, they're metallurgists, they're scientists. You know what I mean? It's crazy, man.
Palmer's a metallurgist, right?
Palmer's metallurgist. Jamil's like some sort of like engineer. It's a thing, man.
It's a geeky thing. The techies, like, you know, yeah, I'm in the semiconductor industry, you know, so.
I don't. I was an aerospace engineer in a previous life.
I'm nothing. I just talk, and so therefore my beer's just passable, a lot like this show. All right, Colin, we'll let you go, man.
Awesome. I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
All right, get out of here. Sure. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Colin.
All right.
Bye, send you some arrogant bastard, my arrogant bastard clone sometime.
Yeah, you should send him some beer. A little beer swap for Rooney.
Mine's cool. Only 7.2 or something like that, but it's closer to the AB.
Would we call that the he kicked your ass ale?
You know, for style, you know, probably if you're trying to go like clone arrogant bastard and make it close to that, then maybe I'd win, but I don't know.
You took my quip a lot more seriously than I intended that.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes. He did kick my ass a little bit with this 9% beer.
There you are. There
we go. No, I mean, I'm enjoying them both, and it's fun to do the side-by-side. He actually mentioned it to me earlier when we were talking about, you know, getting ready for the show. So, but let's talk to JP. But JP, what first got you into homebrewing?
Man, I don't even want to tell you. Mm-hmm. Well, so here. So let me talk to you about homebrewing real fast. I decided recently to get back into homebrewing. I haven't homebrewed a beer, and I don't really remember the last time. It was definitely in this house, so definitely within the last 3 years. But like we were talking about at the break, Char, you know, you and I have the Pico system. Excuse me. And you can't get into that fucking website to save your life. So I feel really bad for people who paid for their shit like you. But you can't get in. You can't get your recipes. You can't use the machine. I know there are like manual settings on that machine that you can sort of like, you know, do the thing, but I'm superbly uninterested in learning that. I don't want to do that. I'm that just blows me away. So if anybody local in the Bay Area wants my Pico system, my Zymatic or my Pico C or my still, let me know. Just come and get it. Get it out of my head.
You're still able to use it, dude. I've used mine.
Dude, I've tried to log into my account on their system. I cannot do it. It will not let me in. And I can't there's not even an option to reset your password. So there it's a thing. So there are people again, smart brewers, engineers who are reverse engineering a system to use the Zymatic. It's like it would be an open source software.
Yeah, there's
data, and like you can't really do anything with it yet. You can just, I guess, pull recipes, but you can't change anything or make new recipes. And I'm like, I just don't want to sit and wait for it. So,
yeah,
I emailed Chris Graham at More Beer, and I was like, hey, look, dude, what's the best like electric mash tun thing system out there? Because, you know, Terrence has my big system. He hasn't done anything with it. During the pandemic, I don't want to go get propane tanks and worry about propane tanks and doing all that bullshit. So I'm like, let's just go as enclosed as possible. So Chris, you know, I got the Brewzilla system, which is Australian apparently. And it's pretty cool. I've only run water through it once, but it has a, you know, a false bottom and a mash pipe, they call it, just an insert. And then you pull that out, and all the wort drains out, and then you have to sparge. So you do have to sparge. So it's not like the Zymatic at all. So you do have to have like a separate vessel of water. I haven't figured all that out yet. And then, you know, it has a pump system, and it has two heating elements. It's a 1500 watt system, but you have a 500 watt switch and a 1000 watt switch, which is kind of cool, right? So if you just want like slowly heat something up, or if you want the burner on, I guess, during your mash while you're recirculating, you can do that. That sounds pretty cool. And the pump is literally whisper quiet. Like you can't hear it. You can definitely do it inside, unlike some of the other automated stuff where it's just like,
right.
Like a rock polishing machine. But anyway, I haven't used it yet, but I am sort of excited to get back into home brewing, man. The issues that I have getting back into it is sort of remembering all the bull crap, and especially moving to a new setup. There's so many different gadgets now on the home brewing market. I don't know if you guys have experienced this either. I mean, I know when I was brewing, you're sort of like, you're sort of taught what you're taught, and you have your equipment and you make it work. it's very, I think it's sort of, for me, it was very rare to like expand on that. Let me pick up this new thing that radically changes my setup. Mm-hmm. With this, I don't even know the water calculation to figure out how much water I put in. The dead space, I don't know anything about it. So I'm a little nervous. I'm a little gun shy with it, but I'm very excited to like start brewing a little bit again.
Cool.
Yeah, I was I was looking at maybe getting a grandfather or something, but I think that the Bruzilla, to the extent I've looked at stuff like that, it's the Bruzilla seems like it's maybe just a little more economically built, or maybe a little bit less complicated.
Yeah, yeah. It mean it's I don't know. Like I said, I've only run water through it. I'll try it again because I want to get my calculations right before I start, but maybe not. I don't know. I was talking to Chris. I'm like, what's my dead space? What's my water to grain ratio? He goes, I don't know. Figure it out. You just got to try. And he didn't say that. He said, just
yeah.
I'm like, okay. I just, at this point in my life, I just want to be told what to do and then just do it. Like that's where I'm at.
Well, if Graham says it's a good thing.
You have some forums that have a good recipe for it. You can just like, give me a basic.
Yeah.
Munich Dunkel or something.
Well, I'm going to do my oatmeal stout, I think, for the first one because I know how that comes out. I know what it is. I just need to like sit and remember my volume calculations and how to figure all this stuff out. But it's what struck me about the homebrewing world now is that there's no it's a lower barrier to entry, or maybe it's because we're like more upper middle class than we were 20 years ago. And so I can go, oh, I can afford that. Oh, for, you know, this makes sense for $400. That's totally fine. But when I was like 22 and brewing, I was like, there's no way. I got a bucket and a spoon. What do I need?
Yeah. I got my $100 kit and I'm using it. That's it.
Yeah. So it is sort of cool in the homebrewing world. There's still room in the industry for weird shit to be made. Mm-hmm. Like someone's making a CO2 recapture system. Up so yeah. your blow up. Yeah, I'm like, what the fuck is this? At a homebrew level, it's a Mylar bag or so whatever. And then at the end of your ferment, you strap this thing on and the tail end of your ferment captures CO2 and then you use that to push into your thing or something like into your keg. I don't really know. Like who would have thought of that? I think that's really cool. Yeah. What a great idea.
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when I started homebrewing in probably 1991, I mean, it was like the time is maybe the year after they started packaging hops in Mylar instead of paper bags. I mean, that was the kind of innovation that they had going on 30 years ago. So the stuff that they have today is really amazing. And that's one reason I really miss HomebrewCon is HomebrewCon. You really get a chance to go and talk to the vendors. You see the new stuff and you kind of take a look at, okay, what's new and cool versus what's new and kind of, I don't really need that.
Right. Hey, Cooper, have we done one break or two? I forget.
I think we just did one.
We did one. Okay. Well, that's a good moment to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. This is Dr. Homebrew.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just two blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small four-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up, you might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
Ma'am, I'll need to take your top off for this examination.
Oh, doctor.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for sticking with us. We're about to wrap up here on Dr. Homebrew. We're talking about just homebrewing in general because I'm back into homebrewing, I think, a Festival of Venom.
Well, yeah.
Excited for.
I know a great show you can send your beers into to get feedback on them. And if you want to send your beers into this show, you just contact Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com. So right. I'll be waiting for your email, JP, and we can get your beer on our show too.
Please do. Please wait for my email.
I will. We email each other every Tuesday, so yeah, it's
That's
not
right. Long. Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot. Oh, people are in the chat. Our chat
questions.
I had up sparge to pre-boil volume boil the original garbage. Yeah, Patrick. I mean, you're not wrong, brother. But I don't know, man. I guess it's very different from how I was homebrewing on my like 1550 or whatever from Morbier, where it's like, these are the measurements. This is the volume. And I guess that's what I'm talking about, where getting back into it after even a couple years break, it's like, I don't know what I'm doing. I should have been brewing already, but I'm not. I'm like a little too nervous about it.
I would say maybe be ready to adjust at the end, like add a little water or, you know, add a little, you know, boil a little longer, you know, if you're
a little longer.
Hitting your gravity.
The big red. Anyway, yeah, I don't know. I'll let you know how it goes. I'm excited about it.
Yeah. And I, you know what, man? I'm in the exact same boat that you are, and that I haven't brewed in about 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, I used to have my big system, used to brew outdoors, don't have that yard anymore.
Tell me about your big system, baby.
Yeah. But, you know, I was planning on going to more of the Pico based, you know, hey, let's just make this real simple, do 2.5-3 gallons at a time. And obviously that's not happening.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens when it's a good system, but when you're dependent on the cloud, whether it's for brewing or anything else, you're dependent on the cloud. And that's for better or worse. If the cloud goes away, you're kind of fucked.
And that's not the first cloud-based brewing software system that has sort of gone belly up. And it's sad because that's sort of our world right now, is the technology of the cloud. And I think that's the future of home brewing to a certain extent, about delivering information, delivering data.
Yeah.
But if we're putting our money into it, I think it's going to make us old heads sort of gun shy about trying new stuff.
And the open source system, like you were talking about earlier, JP, that's a great way to go. On the one hand, it's great if you have people that are committed and want to have an open source and develop something that can be a cloud-based open source system. But the problem is, that's still got to run on some hardware somewhere, and someone has to pay for that. And how are you going to pay? How do you make sure that's going to be around? So you're going to have someone be in charge of that somehow, even though if it's going to be open source, you're going to have to sell ads or sell subscriptions or something, even as an open source system. And there's always that risk you run when you're dependent on the cloud.
Yeah, for sure. But I don't know. I'm excited about this because it does sort of bring back some of the labor, you know, that maybe I missed. I don't know. But we'll see. I'm curious about it. So I'll keep you all posted for sure.
Right on.
All right, everybody.
We should all get like a can of malt extract and a pasta pot and like something in firm. And the three of us should like figure out a time to do this in the next few months. And then we should judge each other's shitty malt extract made in a pasta pot homebrew and see what happens.
No.
Yeah.
No temp control.
It's not a bad idea, honestly.
No temp control.
That. Yeah.
It's like the Mad Max brew competition. I've got a Mr. Beer right over there.
Yeah.
I bought it at a discount store just for fun. And I had this idea for a homebrew competition in my club. It's like, get a few of those and give a few people the Mr. Beer and see who could brew the best beer with the freaking thing.
You know, when I was at Morbier, we always took on the attitude of, we love Mr. Beer. It's great because so many people would come into us after trying Mr. Beer and they go, either I really like it and I want to learn how to do that on a bigger scale, or my beer sucked. How do I make it better? So it was Mr. Beer, like for all the shit that homebrewers give it and I give it to and whatever, because it's very like basic and it makes shitty beer and whatever. It's a great entry point into the hobby from whatever.
I totally forgot Mr. Beer.
Yeah.
You could probably make really great beer in the Mr. Beer if you just, you know, your shit, like at our level.
The problem is, it's just the extract was always just warm on the shelf for 6 months or a year, 2 years. You just never really knew. It smelled like raisins. It's just old shit. So
Yeah, their kits were weird.
People would bring in the beers that they made with it and be like, hey, try this. And you're like, wow, this is like watery cider. That's cool. What is it? Oh, this is my IPA. Do you have a couple hundred dollars? Because let me show you how to do this the right way, man. And, you know, that's what happened. Anyway, let's get out of here, boys. All right.
All right.
All right. Thanks a lot, everyone, for tuning in. Like Brian said, if you want to get on with the boys here in Dr. Homebrew, send an email to brian@thebrewingnetwork.com and be prepared to ship some beers out to us. And that would be really great. And we look forward to doing some beer. Until then, thanks a lot. I don't know. I need a better sign off.
We're looking for a few good beers and a few bad ones.
Sure.
Some bad ones, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for everybody for watching live, man. That was really cool. I like watching the chat sort of light up there at the end. We're talking about homebrew. That's fun. All right, everybody.
Cheers.
We'll tasty.
Too tasty.